Have you seen that vigilante man? Have you seen that vigilante man? Have you seen that vigilante man? I've been hearing his name all over the land. Well, what is a vigilante man? Tell me, what is a vigilante man? Has he got a gun and a club in his hand? Is that a vigilante man? Rainy night down in the engine house, sleeping just as still as a mouse. Man come along and he chased us out in the rain. Was that a vigilante man? Stormy days we'd pass the time away, sleeping in some good warm place. Man come along and we give him a little race. Was that a vigilante man? Preacher Casey was just a working man, and he said, unite all you working men. Killed him in the river, some strange man. Was that a vigilante man? Why does a vigilante man carry that sawed-off shotgun in his hand? Would he shoot his brother and sister down? I rambled around from town to town. I rambled around from town to town. And they herded us around like a wild herd of cattle. Was that the vigilante man? Have you seen that vigilante man? Have you seen that vigilante man? I've heard his name all over the land.
An angry nation. It's time, General, to stack our arms. In fact, that is the first step. That is my first request of you. Stack your arms and disband your army.
And who will enforce the laws once we have them?
The regular army. The police.
They're the ones we just fought and beat. Give me your watch. Give me your watch. Give it to me. Beautiful watch. Expensive. I'll take my rifle. Now you can have your watch back. But without this, never. You draw a strong moral. You ask us to disarm. How could we get our land? Or keep it if we disarm. But it's not that simple. It's a matter of time. And
time! Time is one thing to a lawmaker, but to a farmer there's a time to plant and a time to harvest. And you cannot plant and harvest time.
General Zapata, do you trust me? Just the way my people trust me. I trust you and they trust me as long as we keep our promises. Not a moment longer. Where are you going?
I'm going home. What will you do there?
I will wait, but not for long.
White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a cool, cold day. And the date is, wait a minute, April the 28th, 2016, all day today. You're almost through April, so if you've got something important to do, you better get it done in the next few hours, I'll tell you that. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show. And they'll be coming up pretty soon, but not yet. A couple of guys have already sent theirs in for May. Thank you. Stray Dog, it was one of them, a good old boy out there in New Germany with his fat governor that he's still holding. He's holding hopes that maybe he'll be the vice president. Well, I'm sure that he'd fit right in there with the vice, that's for sure. Yeah, and then go up to resist.com, which I don't think is used enough. I haven't checked the usage lately, but I know it's always been high, but I'm not sure how high. I'll have to check that again. Get my webmaster to clue me in. Okay, I got a different mic on here, and I'm not sure whether it's going to be better or worse, so let me know. Well, anyhow, we got the right wing trying to tear itself apart by going against Trump. See, Trump is our chaos man, and I decided we should be for Trump, because he's our chaos man. We don't have to vote for him. We don't have to go out and march around the street, but as long as he's doing our bidding, well, I think it's fine. The chaos factor is working great. Some of the top politicos are talking about this, where they're going to get the white horse guy. Even if they can suppress Trump, they're trying to figure out who the hell would replace him. So either way, we win. And the Republican Party continues to tear itself apart. And the right wing is tearing itself apart. The conservatives. Listen to Glenn Beck this morning. He's just going on and on. Just really more hateful of Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton. And he said all of a sudden, well, now Trump is starting to use America First. He said, now we got him. We looked that up in Google, and that was the Nazis back in the 30s, the movement to stay out of the war. What a horrible thing, stay out of the war. Yeah, he's going after him for using that. So and then attacking Charles Lindbergh. Yeah, this guy's attacking Charles Lindbergh. I don't think I've ever heard anybody but some Jew attack Charles Lindbergh. And then he said he went back and forth to Germany a bunch of times. He didn't go back and forth to Germany a bunch of times. He was only over there, I think, once or twice. So many of these right-wing conservative talk show hosts that won't let you on to say anything about race are now showing their true colors all the way around. Anybody that does come up with some good ideas and answers to some of the problems, they're attacking them too now. So it shows you that all these people listening to Glenn Beck and Glenn Pecker and all these guys, they're false flags. They always have been false flags. So you're not going to get a false flag here, baby. We're the real thing, man. It doesn't mean that I can't be wrong once in a while. Everybody's wrong once in a while, but it does mean that I is no false flag. The way this campaign is going, it also proves another thing to you, that if we did have a man come along that was really talking our language, that was wanting to try to run for president, he wouldn't get anywhere because all the parties would attack him. You know, that was sort of like George Wallace. They were all attacking him back then. And Barry Goldwater. They were all, most of them were attacking him. Some of the Republican Party stuck with him. But it shows, and Perot. Perot had some good ideas, and look what, how they bashed him. So it shows you that any kind of path to the White House is totally blocked to any real effective change. You might as well get that through your head. And that leaves only one other alternative, and of course the population is not ready for that, and most of us are not ready for that, but we should be getting ready for that and be ready at any time. I don't know whether I told you or not, I applied for a personalized license plate. They said they've come up with it finally here in Indiana, and so I said, I want to be called Aryan One. And 2 or 3 weeks went by, and I got a letter yesterday or the day before. We can't have that because it's not good taste. You know, more people back here in Indiana that have some power use those kind of tactics rather than we just don't like your asshole. Yeah, they come up with this stuff. The newspaper said, well, your letter's not in good taste. Well, there's not much good taste left in this country, if you ask me. And there sure is, and it's offensive. Offensive to who? 99% of the drivers wouldn't even know what Aryan One meant. So it's offensive to the people I'm applying to get it from. That's how that works. It's not offensive because most people would say, we don't want that. It's offensive because the guy that's handing them out the license plates, personalized plates, finds it offensive, or some state senator or state representative or something like that. What they mean is not offensive. It's just something that they don't like, and they know it's a resistance against them, and so they just simply stamp it. Not a good taste or offensive and like that, and send you a letter and say screw you. So that's how it goes in the land of the free, baby. You know, we're only halfway through this pessimist guide to history, but it's got some great stuff in here. I think you'll agree, and a lot of things you never knew. In fact, most of the book we never knew. So let's look at it again. 1865, that was the end of the Civil War. The fiery explosion of the Sultana. Though there were about 100 regular passengers and 80 crewmen already aboard the steamboat Sultana for a trip up the Mississippi River on April 24th, a horde of 2,134 Union soldiers were allowed to board the Vicksburg. Jeez. Though that dangerously overcrowded the steamboat, which had a capacity of just 376, the soldiers had just been released from Confederate prisons and were anxious to get home. Well, I guess this is karma. As the sidewheel steamer left Vicksburg on her way to Cairo, Illinois, the soldiers stretched outside side by side on their blankets to fill nearly every free inch of space in the steamboat, all the way down to the boiler dock deck. The trip upriver was delayed briefly on April 26 when a leak in one of the steamboat's four boilers was repaired in Memphis. Though that was no cause for alarm, the dangerous overcrowding certainly was. That night, the captain, J.C. Mason, remarked to one of his lieutenants that, I'd give all the interest I have in this boat if I were safely landed in Cairo, unquote. Mason never got the chance. At 2 a.m. on April 27th, about 8 miles north of Memphis, a boiler exploded and ripped through the steamboat with the force of a bomb. The blast hurled several hundred men into chilly waters of the Mississippi, along with boiler debris and pieces of the deck. One man who had been asleep suddenly woke up to find himself in the water. The Sultana's twin smokestacks collapsed, crushing men beneath them. An upper deck fell at one end and spilled men and cots directly into the burning remains of the boiler. Fire leaped up from the boiler, quickly spreading along the decks and cabins until the steamboat was engulfed in flames. Panicked soldiers jumped overboard by the hundreds or were pushed into the water by those shoving desperately from the behind. Many drowned soon after they jumped in because the water was so crowded with people struggling wildly to stay afloat. In that melee, even hardy swimmers were pulled down. The lifeboats, meanwhile, were either ruined by the fire or inescapable because of it. Only one made it into the water, and that one went in upside down. Several boats left from Memphis to pick up the survivors after the explosion, and a former Confederate soldier with a sturdy canoe single-handedly rescued 15 Union soldiers from the water. Many of those who survived, however, were simply drifted until they reached the shore, some as far away as Memphis. Oh, wait a minute here. I got the wrong page. Hold it. Officially, the terrible explosion killed 1,547 people, making it one of the worst ship disasters of all time. There is an uncertainty as to how many soldiers actually were aboard. However, and some estimates put the death toll substantially higher. At first, the repaired boiler was blamed for the explosion, but it was later found that another of the boilers had blown up. A much smaller explosion on the Sultana's sister ship the following year seemed to show that the tubular design of the boilers was at fault. They were originally built for use on the less muddy upper Mississippi. Well, there you go. Yeah, I wonder if that was sabotage. They had to go through Confederate lands, the river, going north, and Confederates all over the place, and 1,500 Yankees on that boat. It would have been an opportune target if somebody really was pissed off. However, the one Confederate did save several Union soldiers there. That was pretty good of him, I guess. Depends on how you look at it. Well, I guess it was good. Could have been one of my relatives, because Indiana had a whole bunch of people in that war. And they fought on both the South and the North side. Yeah. 1866 to 1870, famine and fever in northern India. Boy, we get a lot of that stuff in India. A four-year drought spread famine from Bengal region across much of northern India, during which some 1.5 million people died, a fever epidemic that caused the deaths of some 250,000 people broke out in the northwest after the famine. Pandora's box never seems to close over India. Well, also as a side issue, wouldn't that be in the areas that there would tend to be more Aryan peoples still in India? In northern India, 1.5 million people died. I would surmise that might be the area where there might have been more Aryan people at the time, but I'm not sure.
...500 heads of state and government officials, religious leaders and civil society representatives from 120 countries have attended the 7th Global Forum of the United Nations Alliance of Civilizations in the Azerbaijani capital, Baku. It's a political initiative to promote intercultural dialogue. Organizers, faced with increasing acts of terror and an intensifying war in Syria, have decided that this year the focus should be on countering hate speech and preventing violence.
The hatred speech is propagated through the media, through the internet. This is why it is so important also to be able to ally all the civilizations in order to show first the hatred speech can be linked to a religion. It's something which is related to violent feelings.
Officials and activists say those who use hate speech to stir discord in the name of religion and radicalize young people, unfortunately, have all the tools they need. Facebook has become the forum of choice, an easy place for terrorists to infiltrate and then use to promote violence and recruit. One of the top three websites visited by people under the age of 18, it's a happy hunting ground to snare vulnerable, impressionable minds.
There are images and videos that are produced by extremist groups like the Islamic State, for example, like ISIS, that not only propagate these ideas, but also incite individuals into violence and even teach them how to conduct attacks, how to put together bombs and devices. And those clearly show that trend where they're moving towards incitement, and those certainly should be pulled out.
However, not only social media sin in the proliferation of intolerant messages, as the flow of refugees continues to rise worldwide, traditional media also play a role in promoting anti-immigrant rhetoric, mainly by giving unintentionally negative portrayals of refugees. This always leads to consequences, says the UN's High Representative for the Alliance of Civilization, making integration into a new society more difficult.
We see the wave of migration coming from Syria, where the media played very negative, like they are a threat to peace and security, they are a threat to the economy, but all of us know they are victims of dictatorship.
The participants at the forum realize that it's not an easy task to counter hate speech in the media, especially on social networks, when Facebook alone has almost 1.6 billion monthly active users. However, they see a solution to the problem: to enforce laws that prohibit the incitement of hatred, to establish counter-messaging to hate speech, and to force online services to restrict their content more.
When we examine the hate speech, examine the accounts disseminating hate speech, they are mostly from the anonymous accounts or fake accounts. So they can take some strict control mechanisms to stop these anonymous accounts in social media. This is first. Secondly, our pupils have to learn what is the social media, from what is the benefits or the harmful effects of the social media.
The forum in Baku is not the first one devoted to fighting hate speech and violence. In December 2015, a symposium on the same subject was held by the United Nations in New York.
At the conclusion of the cycle of forums, the organizers will publish a textbook in English, French, Spanish, and Arabic. The publication will include recommendations on how to avoid and how to combat hate speech and calls for extremism in the media.
Well, did you read about that in your local paper? Thousands of them come in to talk about you, free speech. The enemies of free speech all gathered, because that's what it is. They want to shut off free speech and control it absolutely and make it illegal and send you to jail like they do in many countries around the world for criticizing your enemies. And he's saying that resisting and objecting to millions of people crossing your borders to take over your land and your jobs and everything else, that's hateful. That's hate. And if you use speech to try to stop it, they want to put you in prison. That's what it's all about, boys. It's coming. It's coming. Big Brother is closing in. The time will come when you'll have no other way out. No other way out. And you wonder who funds all this stuff. Well, I'll tell you who it is. Your tax money and the idle rich support this kind of stuff, because they know that with their money they can do whatever they want to. They don't have to worry about free speech or anything like that. You notice how all these conservative right-wing radio shows like Riley and all of them are slobbering over Negroes, especially. They can pick one out like Harriet Tubman to just go nuts. You see, we used to think that the right wing, somewhere up there were some people that were at the top concerned about the betterment of the white race
and we're not afraid to speak out against the people who were not for the betterment of the white race. But we found out that it was a total sham, a total false flag. The right wing has been a goat from the word one. I mean, when you get to the point where your biggest right wing speakers on their radio talk shows are attacking Charles Lindbergh, I mean, I think you've gone too far, man. That Glenn Beck has also become a religious fanatic and a super duper Jew lover in Israel, man. I mean, if I was an Israeli Jew, I would be embarrassed by these right wing Americans slobbering at their feet. You know they can't respect them, and down deep, and maybe not so deep, they hate them. I know in my past I've always found that people who come up to me and want to grovel and slobber all over me are the ones I trust the least. And I was sitting around thinking the other day, which I do once in a while, and I got to thinking, can we afford governments? Can we really afford governments? Look at the governments around the world and look at our own government and say, can we afford this government? They've taken all our money they can get and give it to somebody else, spread it all over the place. They've built massive arms and give them to the niggers in Africa, the untouchables, and let them slaughter everybody. I've come to the conclusion that I don't think we can afford government. You know, and they say, well, you couldn't govern yourselves. Well, sure we could. People, tribes governed themselves for millions of years. And we can have at the most state control. And even then, you'd have to watch them real close and be ready to knock them off if they got out of line. But I'm serious. All the governments of the world are totally corrupt. So why should we have them? Now, maybe that's making me sound like an anarchist. Well, if it works, it's okay with me. I've read Kropotkin and Bakunin and all those guys, and I think they were pretty sharp, and I agree with a hell of a lot of what they say. Another thing, too, the main thing that keeps these Untermenschen, these subhumans, alive is government. Taking the money from you and giving it to the untouchables. So if there were no central government and central depository, these people would fade away because it would be survival of the fittest. And the fittest would survive, and all these lessers would just do themselves away. They'd go away. Which would greatly trim down the population of the world. Yeah, of course, there are people out there say, man, that Mesko, he's a crazy man. He's a crazy man. No, I'm not. I'm a Midas writer, and I think that what we need is no government. Because the government, for most of my adult life, has been my enemy. I mean, it's been my enemy. It hasn't done anything I want it to. Think about it. Just think about all the refuse we'd get rid of if there were no government handing them out goodies. I see this Cruz, who to me looks like a sleazy porno producer. I mean, physiologically, he's certainly not an Aryan, that's for sure. And he looks like some sleazy porno operator, you know? Now he's chosen this Carla, Florina or something? Florina. Wasn't she the gal that almost bankrupted HP, Hewlett-Packard? If I'm not mistaken, I think it was her. Anyhow, she supports this big trade pact with Asia, the T TTP or whatever it is. She supports that. So how's Cruz going to explain that to the boobs? Oh, yeah, one other thing. No candidate for president in the history of this country ever chose his running mate, vice president, before he won the primary. Cruz is trying to recreate history. I heard his dad on the radio the other day, and I'm glad he's got a moderately thick Spanish accent, because to a lot of people, that's going to be a indicator, if you know what I mean. Well, I never cared for Boehner, who was the Speaker of the House, but Boehner called Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. And he said more than that, too. He went after him pretty good. Boehner said, "I've never worked with a more miserable son of a bitch in my life than Cruz." Boehner also mocked Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, saying, quote, "Oh, I'm a woman, vote for me," unquote, to suggest she's campaigning on her gender, before adding she was accomplished and smart. Clever, yes. Smart, no. This isn't the first time Boehner has unleashed on Cruz. He's previously called him a jackass and a false prophet, and his loathing of Cruz is legendary in the Capitol. To wit, Cruz referred to the Freedom Caucus, the right-wing conservatives in Washington, as the knuckleheads and goofballs. Yeah, I love it. Chaos is wonderful. I'm not going to bore you with much of this, but it's funny as hell the way chaos is setting in everywhere.
You know what's really presidential? Twitter trolling at 6:42 in the a.m. That was the hour today that Donald J. Trump, billionaire, took to the social media again to blast the alleged campaign collusion between Ted Cruz and John Kasich in Indiana, where Trump wrote, quote, "The Cruz-Kasich pact is under great strain. This joke of a deal is falling apart, not being honored, and almost dead." And then the patented Trump exclamation, "Very dumb!" with the exclamation point. Yesterday, we talked on the show about how the anti-Trump treaty fits nicely into the frontrunner's framing of the race as a rigged deal. But this morning, John Kasich phoned into the Today Show and put forth a vigorous defense of the strategy, the alliance, the pact, as perfectly above board.
Listen, Matt, this whole business is about stopping Hillary Clinton from being president. I have laid out a strategy, and I have not told anybody to not vote for me. I'm just not there campaigning. And you know what? When you don't campaign in certain areas in any kind of a race, guess what? Your turnout goes down. I don't tell people how to vote. I am not in that state right now, but I will be in other states. And I will be at the convention, in a broken convention, trying to become president of the United States, because I have the record and the capability to carry out the job and win in the fall.
So, Mark, I bet John Kasich was happy to see that picture of himself from, like, 1986 there on the Today Show, looking very young. How do you think Kasich and Cruz are doing at selling this deal now more than 24 hours in?
I continue to be amazed at how poor the job they're doing. Trump's doing a great job attacking it.
Yeah.
The press agrees with Trump's analysis more and more. And I think the Kasich and Cruz staffs did a good job of putting the deal together belatedly. It was a smart thing to do. But the two candidates continue to act like they're trying to sabotage it. Their rhetoric is a bad process. They're not turning the attention to issues of care that middle class voters would care about and working class voters would care about. I think they have really undermined the possibility that this will work through the candidate's failure to explain this in a way that's optimistic, uplifting, passionate,
horrible,
and away from process.
They've been horrible. They've been horrible in slightly different ways. Cruz has been all the things you've said, which I think is process-driven and negative rather than positive. Kasich has just been defensive and weird and inexplicable. I mean, I think the way Kasich has talked about this has been almost incomprehensibly
bad. There's two possibilities. Either the staff briefed the candidates on what to say. Well, there's three. the staff briefed the candidates, but to say the candidates ignored them.
Yeah.
Two, they didn't brief them, and the candidates are just out there saying, or this is what the staff wanted them to say.
Yeah.
None of those are good possibilities. They're all bad. I suspect they didn't brief them, because these guys are out there just saying stuff.
Look, it's hard to sell something like this in a positive way.
Yes,
you can imagine. We can imagine better ways than this, for sure. But it is hard to sell this in a positive, uplifting, optimistic way that doesn't end up being on process, because it's a weird thing to do. Not many people are familiar with it. Not many voters have seen it. It would take a lot of communication skills that apparently take.
But they should have. But they should have flooded the zone with surrogates.
Of course.
Who said, we're doing this because Donald Trump would be bad for the Republican Party and bad for America. Forget the process. What you need to know is Donald Trump should not be our nominee.
Which, of course, is exactly, in a funny way, like what the best of the rhetoric was. Best, I mean by best, that most effective of the rhetoric was in Wisconsin, which should be the model for how this whole thing is going
to
work.
We want to empower voters to give them the best choices that aren't Donald Trump. Because Trump's just talking about voters and they're talking about process.
Well, if you're not enjoying all this, you don't understand what terrible Tommy's telling you. And you better start listening. This is the chaos factor in full bloom. I told my gal this morning over breakfast, I said, if I was living in Chicago and I was a slime ball and I was looking for porno and knew it was down a certain alley in Chicago, and I go down that alley and the guy I would expect to meet looks just like Cruz, with a hat pulled down over his head and wearing a trench coat. In Casey's, he's so far out there, he's totally out in la-la land. Republican chairwoman of Hamilton County, I guess that's Pennsylvania, maybe it's Indiana, Laura Campbell said, quote, "People who were supporting Casey's have been coming into the office to pick up Trump signs." Here goes the territory. While Germany's politicians are loudly debating whether Islam is compatible with democracy, well, of course it's not. None of the religions are really compatible with democracy. Five of its state universities are quietly developing pioneering new Islamic theology faculties to try to ensure that it is, or at least camouflage it from the whites. The five universities in Münster, Osnabrück, and Frankfurt, Tübingen, and Erlangen, and Nuremberg recently passed their first official evaluations by Muslim and Christian experts, and were granted $20 million to continue for another 5 years. Another 5 years to tear down European culture and replace it with crap. The programs now have a total of over 1,800 students and plan to grow. The largest program in Münster has 700 students in its three-year bachelor's program, and received more than double that number of applicants in this academic year alone. This is like somebody preaching against the use of heroin at the same time sticking a syringe needle into their arm. Their example has been such a success that Berlin decided to introduce Islamic theology at one of its universities, even though it will not get federal funds for it. You know, those Germans are still into this... We're bad people from World War II. And of course, they weren't bad people even in World War II, of course. This practical approach these faculties have taken towards training Muslim religious teachers, conducting research into Islam, and fostering interfaith dialogue contrasts sharply with the increasingly shrill declarations coming from Germany's far right, especially the alternative for a German party. This love affair will not last forever, believe me. I know how these religious outfits operate. First they say, well, come, let's reason together. But after a while, when there's a competition for the money and the bodies, it'll come apart, and then Katie bar the door shut. This party will hold a convention April 29th and 30th to agree on its new platform. Its deputy leader, Beatrix von Storch, said Islam violates Germany's democratic constitution and its public symbols such as minarets, muezzins, people who call Muslims to prayer, and full-face veils should be banned. Well, I feel the same thing about Christianity. Christianity violates Germany's democratic constitution, too, but they look the other way. Yep. Joanna Wenke, Germany's federal minister for education and research, struck a different tone in January when she approved the renewed funding for the five theological centers. With these centers, it's not the faith, it's the destruction plan, has found a home in Germany's academic and theological debates. Oh, come, let us reason together. This is an important contribution to interreligious dialogue. We love that dialogue. We know where dialogue takes you. Come, let us dialogue together. Fuck you. German state schools have religious education classes that students attend according to their beliefs. Well, the only belief is worth a damn in the country and in Europe now is non-belief. Free thinker. Everyone become a free thinker. Instruction in the majority Protestant and Catholic faiths are available countrywide, and a few areas also offer Jewish education. Are the Jews being left out a little bit here? The growing number of Muslims in Germany, four states have introduced regular Islamic education for their Muslim public school students. Isn't that wonderful? I tell you, you got to invite Dracula into your house. And once he's in there, you're through. The course needs university-trained teachers, so some universities had to start offering academic programs in Islam and probably import mullahs or something from Middle East. The faculty teach standard courses in the Quran, Islamic law, classic Muslim philosophy, and how to build body bombs, as well as Arabic and pedagogy. Marrying traditional Islamic learning with German academic standards has not been easy. Well, remember, Hitler liked the Muslims. In fact, he talked about having a religion of being a Muslim at one time. I forget what the exact words he used, but he was slobbering all over those Muslims. He wanted that oil too, baby. Well, that's enough of that nonsense. Self-destruct, give up, cowardly bastards. Been better off to stick with Christianity because Christianity is folding up too. There's thousands and thousands of people in Europe leaving the Christian churches every year. Now, what are you going to do when you go to one of these classes where you can talk about the Muslim religion and somebody stands up and criticizes the Muslim religion and the invasion and the use of body bombs and everything else? Are they going to be charged with a hate crime? Yeah, you could be a student in university and be hauled away to jail for saying a hate crime for saying the truth. Here's the lackluster response by conservatives. If Islamic theology faculties follow this example, some conservatives worried. The conservatives are worried, just like they're worried over here. That's all they ever do. They could become hotbeds of heresy, spreading a reformist Islam unfit to teach young Muslims. That's a typical sidestepping conservative asshole. Remember, the conservatives fight a war, but they always only end up with half, if that. Only half. They never win the war. They just keep retreating. The following is satire. The announcement after a federal judge's ruling that only Christians will be hired to work at the Ark Encounter, the theme park featured life-size replica of biblical vessel, has sent waves through the non-Christian religious tourism world. While Muslims and Jews are among the believers planning visits to the theme park being built by Answers in Genesis, which also owns the nearby Creation Museum, some wondered, how could Christians colonize our shared story? Leaders from Kentucky's Muslim and Jewish communities told the literalists they were already constructing their own 510-foot-long amusement arcs near the Christian boat. Quote, Shem, Ham, and Japheth didn't have to affirm any creeds to help their dad build and sail this ark, unquote, said Rabbi Noah, CEO of the Jewish Ark Encounter. Wonder how much money he's making. You shouldn't have to profess Christ as your Savior to board a replica either. The leader of the Islamic Ark Encounter, Imam Nuh, noted how the state of Kentucky gave answers in Genesis 18.25 million in tax rebates for the project. That should be against the law. He said his mosque already applied for the tax rebate. Quote, if the Christians get a state-sponsored funding, so should the Muslims, but we're not holding our breath, unquote. You see how fast this Muslim thing is going? Yeah. Reaction to the three competing arcs, they're talking about Noah's Ark, has erupted online with one ark for all and three arcs too many trending on the social media. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin announced that his administration's support for equal tax rebates for the Islamic and Jewish arcs. It's also their religious right to restrict any Christians from applying, unquote. The governor's press release stated. I love it. The intra-Abrahamic rivalry has left many local residents looking for consensus and rebuilding in this town of fewer than 4,000 people and hoping the arrival of Morgan Freeman, the nigger, I mean the untouchable from Hollywood, will bring healing. Just the guy to bring healing. Freeman announced Thursday that he will devote an episode of The Story of God to the arcs. Well, you're such a fine man. A fine man you are. Quote, God only built one ark for Noah and his family, unquote, Freeman said in his somehow deeply authoritarian and yet also compassionate voice. Quote, will the animals also have to pass religious tests? Unquote. Well, of course. What do you think, Morgan? You stupid or something? Well, if the global warming keeps going, you're going to need those damn arcs. Keep them seaworthy. I don't know how close they are to the Ohio River, but they'd be better off to have them by the Ohio River so they can get out of there. Christ insanity, Jew insanity, Muslim insanity. I wonder if the Satanists are building an ark too, you know, since they obviously have to believe in the Bible gobbledygook, or the Satan wouldn't make a point. Well, one of our people sent in a question here, which may be interesting. I wonder if a person with no interest in a reputation could apply for a restraining order against Negroes, Jews, and Latinos with pictures of them and citing their high rates of STDs, rape, and pedophilia might get on the news. The equality tards and the Christ insanities may be more difficult. Well, I would suggest checking on people in the neighborhood, and if there's any blacks around, you know they're going to have records, and if they have a bad enough record, you could do that. I mean, if you had a guy that lived a block or so away, and he was a child molester, anything like that, or had a record, I think you could get a restraining order. You might have to fake it that you think he attacked you, but it might hit the news. Well, here's some interesting things, maybe. Here is the terrorist organization Daesh's new bloody strategy. Swamp Sweden and Europe with homecoming elite soldiers together with homebred lone wolves, argued a Swedish terrorist expert. Well, I could have told you that a long time ago. In fact, I did tell you a long time ago, you're going to flood these countries with these people, and even if only one in a thousand of these Islamists or whatever, we're not even including the dipshits that join up with them, one in a thousand of them are assassins or whatever you want to call them. I'm not going to call them terrorists, but they're bad guys if they're trying to blow up your house or something. So, Daesh has raised its ambitions, Larry Nyroos, chief analyst of the Swedish Security Services Department of Counterterrorism, told Expressen. According to him, security services across Europe are now poised with a problem of numerous approaches to terrorist attacks, from the simplest to the most complex. You're telling me that they couldn't figure this all out years ago? It's been going on. The invasion started years ago. It's amazing, unbelievable, how an untrained person like myself can easily figure this stuff out, and these people can't, which leads me to believe that they want it to get worse, and then they can get involved in it, and then there's lots of money flows, like the Homeland Security. Billions and billions of dollars are being spent. Because of the fear they've endangered and injured into the people. And so that's what's happening in Europe. Last year, Daesh managed to carry out 60 attacks in a dozen countries outside the war zones in Syria and Iraq, he noted, citing various attack patterns ranging from single actions to craftily masterminded operations. Well, like I say, it's all a big game. According to Nyroos, homebred European radicals who fail to get to Syria or Iraq may instead shift to preparing attacks on the home turf or support terrorist activities otherwise. Why you bring the teachers in to teach them Islam? You're bringing the imams in to teach them Islam, and then they get the Islam, and then some guy gets them, some other Islamic guy gets them off to the side and says, oh, well, you got it all wrong. That's not really Muslim. This is the Muslim, and you throw the bomb. Oh, God. According to, at present, Daesh's elite soldier, Osama Krayem, from Malmo, is imprisoned in Belgium, suspected of being an accomplice to the terrorist cell behind the bloody attacks in Paris and Brussels, whereas the teacher college dropout, Svegan Aiden, is charged in Stockholm for preparing a lone suicide attack against targets in Sweden. Remarkably, Aiden was reported to have watched a YouTube clip where Daesh spokesman Abu Muhammad al-Adidin addresses lonely sympathizers abroad at least 18 times, whereas he downloaded a bomb manual from the web and got down to business. Quote, the fact that propaganda is so easily accessible leads to lone wolves being quickly self-radicalized and trained with intent to commit acts of terrorism without even having any physical contact or communication with people linked to a terrorist group, unquote. Larry Nyroos said, citing Daesh's appeal from 2014 to the group's sympathizers to take single action. What an idea. Earlier this week, the very same Expression tabloid revealed that the security service was investigating a tip-off from an Iraqi security service about a cell with 7 to 8 experienced Daesh terrorists who may have infiltrated Sweden, or could be Mexico, or maybe Argentina. quote, "It's all about creating lengthy, complex operations involving firearms, which result in a super drama that paralyzes an entire city and creates a huge polarization," unquote. Terrorism expert Magnus Ranstorp of the Swedish National Defense College said. They need me as an advisor, these guys. Either that or run my old radio shows. The Iraqi ambassador to Stockholm believes such an attack actually would not be anything strange. Quote, "Many people went to the war in the Middle East and now they are coming back to Sweden," Ambassador Baker Fatah Hussein told Expression. According to him, this is nothing peculiar to Sweden alone, as the returnees are flooding the whole Europe. Wow. Gee, that is really fresh news. Something we never could have thought about or dreamed could have happened. Gee, thank you for telling me, stupid bastards. Lots of money being made in the security business. Lots of money. And the more fear they spread, these guys don't care if a few people get popped or even 100 people in Paris. You just don't understand how cynical these bastards are. They don't care. That just, they just stand out there and say, "Oh my God, we feel for the families and everything." It's all bullshit. They're making fortunes off this stuff. And it'll just keep going on because they know they can scare the shit out of the public. Why do you think they keep running these pictures over and over and over of people being bombed? Over and over and over, 100 times a day. Every time you turn on a TV or radio, you're hearing about it. Similar to right here, we had 8 people, gunned down over in Ohio, and Christ has been on the radio every day since. Over and over and over and over on these radio shows, especially the local radio shows. You know, what can I do about it? I don't know who did it. I didn't do it. Leave me alone. I got other things to do. No, it's all spreading fear. Spread the fear. Spread the fear. Keep the fear going. Even the movies. I like movies, but they spread fear, that's for sure. Well, 2 men from Dodge City have been charged with a federal hate crime charge for attacking 3 Somali untouchable Negro men because of their race and national origin. Do you realize how many Somalis we got in this country? Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of those black boys we brought into this country. I mean, right here in Indiana, they've got them all over the place. So how can you hit anybody without hitting a Somali? Acting U.S. Attorney Tom Beal of the District of Kansas and Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Vanita Gupta, head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, said 31-year-old Omar Cantero Martinez and 24-year-old Armando Soleto have been charged with these 3 counts of causing bodily injury to a victim because of actual perceived race and national origin. Well, we got mestizos beating up and getting hate-crimed, beating up on Somali Negroids. Well, as you fill the country up with non-whites, that's logical. They're going to start killing each other. And to be charged with a hate crime, that's funny. Oh, they should put a medal on them. Now, if we could get all the non-whites that are coming into the country to turn on another non-white and take care of the situation, I think maybe that would be better than any of our guys going into the streets and doing something silly. Yeah, let's start thinking smart. Of course, I've been doing that for years. Back in California, I used to put up signs that said, "Welcome, come to this Mexican-American picnic or something." And then I'd say, "Don't bring any niggers." Put them up in San Diego. That we do the opposite with the blacks. See? We're having a big black blowout over here with lots of good music. come one, come all. But don't bring your Mexican friends. I had a lot of fun with that. Well, that's it for this day, Thursday, and I forgot to play my Thor's music. Well, hell, maybe I can play it on the way out.
Warrior, who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is a champion of the gods. He's the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. You go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
An agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.
Dawn of the Viking Age, the family farm was the basic economic unit of Norse life. As farmers and herdsmen, they planted grains and vegetables during the short growing seasons and relied heavily on livestock. But peace in the Northland was coming to an end. The expanding Viking population needed more fertile farmland, and tensions boiled over. Inevitably, violence flared between the Viking clans. As the stronger attacked the weaker, raiders fell on farmers with axes, swords, and brutal violence. Land feuds erupted with utter lawlessness.
Basically, a king was a man who had a big farm. And he had his bonders, his farmers and his slaves. And whenever he felt like going and attacking somebody else, he just got all his guys together and went off and attacked them. The Vikings would run into the village, grab everything they could, take off again. It's not terribly sophisticated, but very effective.
Some Vikings, however, set aside their differences and prepared to seek their fortunes elsewhere. The hands and tools that once shaped the crossbeams of barns turned to another task. Along the shores of the northern inlets, boats were built. Boats that changed the lives of these people. Viking longships. These extraordinary vessels, revolutionary in design, took history on a new course and launched an onslaught that dominated Europe and beyond for the next three centuries.